Good afternoon. Welcome in to another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM FM 95.9. Also myklgr.com. Lots to get to here today. We're going to be joined by Shabazz Khan, the director of social media content for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And we'll be talking with him about just what exactly a team needs to do in order to engage its fans on social media. Very much looking forward to that conversation, which will be coming up at around 3:15. We've got the final episode of the Purple Pillage podcast here today, and we've got a lot of other things to discuss today as well. So why don't we get right to it? We'll start off by taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today, you may have heard that Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels was set to be introduced as the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts today. Well, not anymore. McDaniels at some point decided that he did not want to take the Colts job, so he's headed back to New England in a stunning reversal, of which there have been no shortage of opinions throughout the National Football League. Plenty of teams who have decided that they are not in favor. Plenty of media personalities who have said they are not in favor with what McDaniels did. And it basically boils down to a couple of different things that could be the culprit. We'll discuss those later on in the show today. Minnesota Twins starting pitcher Irvin Santana is going to be having, had actually, surgery on his middle finger of his pitching hand. So he will be out 10 to 12 weeks, which puts the Twins behind the eight ball. It makes you wonder if they're going to ramp up trying to acquire a couple of starting pitchers to fill out the rotation here in the next couple of weeks. Bad news for the New York Knicks as Kristaps Porzingis tore his ACL last night. He is done for the year and may make the Knicks a seller at the trade deadline tomorrow. We'll take a look at what all to expect from the trade deadline coming up on tomorrow's show. Other top headlines, the Gopher men's basketball team hosting Nebraska last night, and Nebraska puts on an offensive show. They win 91-85. The Gophers' woes continue in the Big Ten. They are 3-10 now in Big Ten play and just have gone completely south since Reggie Lynch was suspended for the rest of the season. And other headlines, the Minnesota Wild were in action last night. Jason Zucker equaled his career high in goals, and the Wild ended up winning, beating former head coach Mike Yeo 6-2 after a rough loss to Dallas earlier this week. Those are your top sports headlines here for today. When we come back, we will talk a little Timberwolves with Shabazz Khan. That is coming up right after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
And we are joined on The Scoop today by the Senior Manager of Digital Content for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Shabazz Khan. Shabazz, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Well, my first question for you, and I know when you see the title social media Senior Manager of Digital Content, you think a lot of social media as well, Twitter, Facebook. What sorts of things do you do with that title day-to-day for the Wolves?
Yeah, so while a primary focus of it is social and digital media, I would say my position and the position of digital is so all-encompassing now. You know, some days it's PR, some days it's photography, video editing, sometimes it's interviewing some of the guys, reaching out to different influencers and collaborators, and you know, other times it's trying to creatively think about strategies and campaigns on the marketing front, and other times, you know, it is posting or coming up with in-game strategies for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of that. So really, I think while a primary focus of it, the end goal is the social and digital output, there's a lot that goes into that.
I know when I was younger, it seemed like the way that fans were able to get highlights and reaction from games was just to watch SportsCenter or something after the game was done. But now, as things have evolved, everything happens so right on the spot. How difficult is it to try to engage fans the moment something happens as social media continues to grow?
Absolutely. It's extremely important, especially when you're representing a brand that is well known, at least within Minnesota, but also you're trying to make it so that it's an appealing brand to engage with for folks that aren't familiar with the team and maybe even the sport. So it's as important as ever to engage in real time. I very much see Twitter as a second screen experience. You know, it's not the primary place you're going to necessarily watch the game, but you want to get caught up and you want to get the reactions that resonate with you on these social media platforms. So I think it's extremely important. I think the Eagles did a good job, you know, during the Super Bowl. It wasn't necessarily the dominant platform that people were watching and engaging the Super Bowl with, but after the game they had some incredible content, and that's really something that, you know, I try to exemplify in our team's work as we're going forward.
You mentioned the Super Bowl, and obviously with it being in Minneapolis, that brought a lot of celebrities to town, and it seemed like a lot of them had a chance to take in a couple of Timberwolves games. I know Patriots coach Bill Belichick was at one of the games throughout the week. Sting was at the Saturday night game, so you have some of the top celebrities from all across the world of entertainment. What was that experience like, having those guys there and trying to make it known that you've got these celebrities at the game so that fans can tune in and even come to the games later on?
For sure, it was really cool. Just coming from a consumer standpoint, from an outside perspective, you know, this is my third week back with the Timberwolves. I'm originally from here, used to work here as an intern, and came back, and it just reminded me of the older days, just the atmosphere in Minneapolis, and especially within Target Center. It reminded me of those early 2000 years, and then having all these folks at the games, it was really cool to see, you know, Jimmy Butler talking to Antonio Brown on the sideline, and all these different folks there was so many that it was just incredible for a weekend for folks to come out and see the Timberwolves games, and the atmosphere that went along with such. Had some great halftime performances, and it was cool for us to be able to post stuff like that, because it ended up being that, you know, some of the celebrities amplified our posts and retweeted some of the stuff that we had put out there, and obviously not a lot of national attention on the city. So it was cool to be a part of that and try to leverage the exciting times that were in Minneapolis between the Super Bowl and, of course, Wolves on a great home winning streak, closing in on a franchise record on most games won in a row at home.
One more on the Super Bowl. There's a little bit of a friendly rivalry between Karl-Anthony Towns and Tom Thibodeau, as they were both cheering for the opposite teams in the Super Bowl. And Towns, to maybe the ire of some Timberwolves fans and Vikings fans as well, posting his love for the Eagles in the days leading up to the Super Bowl. But that had to be fun between those two to be able to just kind of some lighthearted ribbing between Towns and Thibodeau leading up to the game.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's a testament to the chemistry that the team has shown. Obviously, you know, second year that Tibbs has been here, and Kat's just such a fun person to be around, and the personalities within the locker room are just fun between Jimmy, Kat, Taj. You know, Jimmy's always having fun with folks. Kat's part of that. You know, there's always the banter in the locker room after games between Jimmy and Kat and Taj and Tyus and Jamal and all these different folks. So it's just really cool to see that camaraderie paying off on the court, but also, you know, having some fun off the court. I think it's a good time.
Looking at just how the Wolves are doing at this point, 34-22, and you mentioned the success at home, 22-6 at Target Center, and I had a chance to go to the game Saturday night against the Pelicans. The atmosphere from the last couple of years where the Wolves have not had as many wins, it seems like it's completely different, and it's so great to see fans coming back. And not only that, but you look at the early moments of that game against the Pelicans, and they were loud. Fans were loud, and that has created an environment where it truly is difficult for opposing teams to come in and win on any given night at the Target Center.
Yeah, no, it's like I had alluded to before, much like their early 2000s when, you know, we were continually a winning team, that this atmosphere, it's starting to ramp up to what that used to be like. And a lot of folks, you know, especially within the organization, have always said that, you know, Minnesota is a basketball city. And you've seen that with the Lynx, you know, during their playoff runs. You've seen that in the early 2000s with the Wolves. And it's only gonna grow from here, given the winning, because now, you know, this team really has something exciting going on. And, you know, as we push closer and closer towards April, I really think you're gonna see even more of a drastic difference in terms of the fandom that's in Target Center and how that carries over for the court.
Shabazz, I wanted to ask you kind of a funny thing that happened on Twitter, a post from the Timberwolves official account yesterday, in regards to trade proposals being sent by fans and the trade deadline coming up tomorrow. Just talk a little bit about the interaction from the Timberwolves account with fans, and not only that, but with other teams as well. I think that's one of the more fascinating things about the Twitter accounts for various NBA teams, is that they're interacting with each other too, and it makes for some very hilarious moments on Twitter when both teams are going back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, you know, how that came about yesterday. Obviously, we've had a little bit of a gap in between games, and yesterday is, I guess, what you'd consider kind of a slow day in terms of content in between games. And given such, you know, we wanted to creatively utilize downtime to kind of leverage what's going on. Obviously, trade deadline closing in tomorrow, and, you know, every time one of us is logging into the account, there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of trade proposals. So given such, you know, we just wanted to make sure fans knew we appreciated it, but there wasn't a whole lot we could do in a way that wasn't, you know, putting anybody down, but also, you know, making light of the situation. And thankfully, people you know, people have some fun with it. Given the interaction with teams, you know, as I said before, I used to be with the Sacramento Kings, and that was a huge thing that we had done over there, and that I try to bring, you know, to each situation I'm in. You know, I've been in social for over 6 years now, and that's always been something that I've tried to bring. As you said, it makes for a lot of fun moments when teams are you know, sharing banter back and forth and having some fun, because for the fan, that's really an experience that, you know, really adds to what's going on the court. There's these little fun rivalries off the court, and social media is the best place to do that, given the amount of people engaging with stuff. So, given so, you know, we try to make it fun. We try to engage with fans. You know, there was a fan in there that had said, well, how about trading the Twitter handlers yesterday? And we just replied, trade replied. And that those kind of moments, you know, they seem very minuscule, but from a fan perspective, you know, when brands are engaging with you like that, that only grows the affinity that you have for those brands, in my opinion. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to make fans bigger fans and create new fans out of things and moments that we're creating and resharing on social.
Shahbaz, as we wrap up here today, just want to give you a chance as well to give the listeners all the different ways that they can interact with the Timberwolves on various social media platforms.
Absolutely. You can follow the Wolves on Twitter at Timberwolves. Facebook, if you type in Minnesota Timberwolves, we'll be there. Instagram is also Timberwolves. YouTube is MN Wolves. Snapchat, I believe, is also Timberwolves. So a bunch of different ways to engage with the folks. You can also, you know, reach out to any of our digital content folks, between myself, Kyle Radke, and Seth Auger, who are all in the digital team. We'd be happy to assist in any way possible besides listening to your trade proposals. yeah, so looking forward to whatever fans have to say to the Wolves. And, you know, we'll try to keep things fun and engaging.
Outstanding. Well, thanks for stopping by here today, Shahbaz, to give us a little bit of a look at how social media works with the Timberwolves and the fans as well. Good to talk to you today, and we'll hopefully do that again a little bit later on down the road.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the day.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Touchdown!
This is the Purple Pillage with Neil Roberts and Lee Fockin. The Pillage starts now.
And welcome to another edition of the Purple Pillage. I'm Leif Bakken with Neil Roberts. This one brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge, located 4 miles west of Newtown, North Dakota. Neil, Super Bowl 52 in the books from U.S. Bank Stadium, and the Eagles beat the Patriots 41-33, and what a game it was.
I don't think people saw 74 points in this one. Maybe some sort of an offensive explosion, but not that. Offense moved the ball. Not a lot of turnovers either. If you liked offense, it was a fun Super Bowl. And yeah, one of the best ones ever, obviously, coming right down to the last minute, the desperation throw in the end zone. Eagle fans are ecstatic. Patriot fans, not so much. I was, you know, still recovering from the Vikings NFC Championship loss, so I was in no mood to pull for anyone wholeheartedly, but I'm glad Philadelphia won it. They deserve it. It's good that Carson Wentz got a ring, even though he wasn't able to play that game. Mm-hmm. I think it was well stated by several people that they would not have been in that position if not for Carson Wentz. Kudos to Carson Wentz. Congratulations, Eagles.
If you haven't already, folks, maybe take a moment to say a prayer for Philadelphia. I'm sure things are a mess there, as you probably see on social media and everywhere on the news. But let's talk about this one a little bit, Neil, where even though you and I weren't rooting for Tom Brady, he had a really good game, throwing 28 for 48, 505 yards. He had 3 TDs. All in all, the offense has really just went after it and made it happen. And it was really fun to watch between these two teams.
Yeah, mentioned Elif, that someone who showed us that Tom Tom Brady was 28 out of 48, 505 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. We just said, boy, how bad did they beat Philadelphia? But you just hit it, Leaf. They went back and forth. Kudos to Doug Peterson and going for those fourth down calls. They were both gutsy calls. They were making these fourth down plays. He knew they had to because they weren't stopping him on defense. When I was rooting for the Eagles there, I was really glad that he went for it. And I thought, if you miss it, you miss it. But they converted it. Nick Foles with a few big plays there on those as well. That's what you need. You need to make a few big plays in a Super Bowl beyond what you would normally plan, and the Eagles did that. In the strip sack at the end, because they weren't going to stop them by downs probably, but they needed a turnover there at the end, and they got it.
Yeah, it was a great job by the Eagles defense. And then Nick Foles being the first quarterback to receive a touchdown in a Super Bowl, so that's huge. Let's move on and talk about Nick Foles, because he's going to be our Four Bears Casino and Lodge player of the game for the Super Bowl. We had him last week saying that he had to play like he did against the Vikings, and that's exactly what he did, and even probably better against the Patriots. Caught that one touchdown. He threw for three. He had 373 yards and went 28 for 43. I don't think you can ask for a better performance in the Super Bowl for a backup quarterback.
Exactly. I was just going to say, for a backup quarterback, holy smokes, and he's really put himself in position. Now, who knows where he'll be next year? Obviously, he's still under contract with Philadelphia, but it sure gives them a big bargaining chip with the draft coming up. And Carson Wentz coming back next year. Doug Peterson's already said that Carson Wentz is his quarterback, so he's not going to have any controversy there. And Carson deserves to be the quarterback. As we mentioned earlier, they wouldn't be in a spot without him. Anyway, yeah, Nick Foles, I think we hit the nail on the head last week that if he plays well, they've got a really good chance to win, and if they don't, they won't. He did, and they did. Kudos to Nick Foles. Huge game. Made a lot of big throws. A well-designed offense as well. So kudos to that coaching staff as well.
Nick Foles, your player of the week, showing us that he knows how to throw and how to catch. Thanks to Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Well, Neil, it's the last episode of the Purple Pillage, and so I thought we'd take a minute to talk a little Vikings and talk about our biggest moments of this year.
Yeah, well, the Vikings still looking for an old coordinator as we're recording this on Tuesday. And I thought I heard on talk radio that they're interested in Philadelphia's quarterbacks coach, and for good reason, but they won't let him interview him until the 14th of February. Clearly, the Vikings are going to wait for that and make him part of that process. Obviously, they're not too concerned about the guys who are on the table getting away at this point. They have a handful that they're also considering, and maybe they'll interview somebody else yet too. Who knows? The draft coming up, of course, Spielman, that's going to really help dictate the Vikings team next year. They need a couple more pieces out of this year's draft, from maybe D-line to help on the O-line, maybe another receiver, etc., including quarterback and Kirk Cousins. You know, we talked about that already too. Right. That's still a possibility. A lot of that stuff can't be decided. I think mid-March is when free agents can sign. So they can talk all they want, but until that day, you never know. All that being said, going back to the biggest moment of the year, I mean, it has to be the Diggs catch in the playoffs for me. When you think they're beat, their body language is horrible, and they get that miracle play. Even though they lost the next week, it's still going to go down, and Vikings lore is one of the biggest plays in the history of their franchise. As far as some players that stand out, watching these guys in camp and everything else when we were down there, really kind of, as a fan, proud of the way they just, everybody stepped up, you know, when injuries, next man up, and
absolutely.
The years out of guys from like Zendejo that you weren't expecting it, McKinnon coming in, and Murray when Cook goes down, and the offensive line, you know, just moving guys in and out as needed. Really, it was really nice to see the Vikings and their depth, I guess, from that standpoint. How about you, Leaf?
My biggest moment was getting to go to US Bank Stadium for the first time, watch the Vikings beat the Rams, and getting to cut that podcast, radiocast on the field, and see that environment and see what's going on, and be in press row with newspapers, TV, radio, and be a floor away from some of the biggest names we know in the announcing game of football, really makes me appreciate being in broadcasting and being part of the media. It was just really cool, and that's going to be something I'm going to have forever. My first experience at US Bank Stadium, and I hope I get to return either as a media member or maybe working for them, or who knows.
Sounds good.
Neil, any final thoughts for the Purple Pillage Nation?
Just, yeah, thanks for listening to us all through the year. It's been a lot of fun to do. Kind of a new task for us this year. You know, we never thought that we'd be going till Super Bowl week. No, it's been a fun year, Leaf. Who knows? Maybe we can do something like it again next year.
We appreciate everybody carrying this and making it part of their week.
I want to thank you. You know, Leaf came on with Forward Communication a little over a year ago, I believe it was. Started off as an intern, has turned into just a great associate. And Leaf's the one that puts this thing together every week, plans it out, does the post editing, sends it out to all of our stations, and does all that stuff behind the scenes. So, Leaf, I just want to say a special thank you to you for all your hard work. If you're with Forward for a while yet, great. I know you're off to some greener pastors as well as you're graduating in May. All this stuff is well-earned and well-deserved. So nice job. And also a shout-out to Chris Price. Chris moved to Montana recently, and he's been a big part of Forward Communication over the years, and he still helps us get this podcast executed elsewhere. So a special shout-out to Chris as well.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you, Neil, for everything you do as well. This will be the final time from the Purple Pillage. For Neil Roberts, I'm Leif Bakken. Pillage on!
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Miss today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
Back here on The Scoop, and safe to say that there have been some better days in Indianapolis. What a weird situation in not only Indianapolis, but also New England. As yesterday at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning or so, all systems were go, with Josh McDaniels being named the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. They were going to have a press conference today to introduce him. They had tweeted out a bunch of different things, were making some jokes about getting the Indianapolis visors ready to go, because McDaniels is a visor wearer. And then all of a sudden, at about 5 o'clock yesterday, things started to turn. And there were rumblings that McDaniels was maybe getting cold feet. And then all of a sudden, a flood of reporters saying that McDaniels had indeed withdrawn his name from the head coach position and was headed back to New England to be their offensive coordinator yet again. So what that tells me is basically it could be a couple of things. The first is that McDaniels was not thrilled about what sorts of medical information they had on Andrew Luck. And Andrew Luck's offseason has been shrouded a little bit in mystery. There's not really a whole lot known as if he needs any more surgery or if he is going to be healthy at the beginning of the year. Really, nobody knows at this point. So it could be that. That could be one of the reasons that McDaniels decided to jump ship. There also were rumors of some friction with Colts owner Jim Irsay that McDaniels wasn't entirely comfortable with that arrangement. But I'm not as convinced with that one, because if there were any indications that that McDaniels was not going to be comfortable working for Jim Irsay, then he would likely have not taken the deal in the first place. This was basically at the one-yard line, so to speak, is that it had gotten to the point where McDaniels had even named some assistants who had been accepted into their various positions with the Colts. So this was about as close to a done deal as you could get. Yet then something changed. The more likely scenario that I think is what caused McDaniels to stay is that he, at the 11th hour, was approached by Robert Kraft and was told, look, Belichick's not going to be coaching forever. If you stick around, we'll let you be the coach in waiting. And when he does end up stepping down, you will be the next head coach for the New England Patriots. That is about the only reason I can think of that you go from what seems like a done deal and seems like it is going to end up happening to all of a sudden just the complete opposite. And the only issue or the only problems with that are, what is New England going to look like once Belichick steps away? It's likely that Tom Brady will do the same and that they will both step away at the same time. There really is no quarterback succession plan at this point. That succession plan was traded to San Francisco for a second-round pick. So maybe they take a quarterback this year. But the likelihood is that it's going to be a complete unknown as to what McDaniels would have when he ends up taking over. And here's the other thing, too. You are going to be the new head coach for maybe the most dominant franchise in football that has gotten used to winning. There's no guarantee that he'll be able to do that once Belichick steps aside. So you go from a very, very, I don't know if low-key is the word to use, but you go from having a chance to carve out your own legacy to having to be the guy that replaces Bill Belichick. So that is one of the prevailing theories as to why McDaniels came back. Whether or not that's true, I guess we'll see. There have been some attempts to confirm it, and really nothing confirmed at this point as to whether or not that was promised to McDaniels, and that led to him staying. But it's a weird situation all around. And there's no indication that McDaniels signed any agreement. It sounds like they came to a verbal agreement, but then something happened at the 11th hour. This is, I suppose, similar to with any job where you tentatively agree, hey, this sounds good, I'm excited about this, and then something changes and you end up having to go in a different direction. Now, that puts the employer at a bad spot because maybe they had some other candidates that they would have liked to interview or would have gone after had they not had someone in place. So it puts the Colts in a rough spot, but it's not one that they can't recover from by any means. The biggest unfortunate, the most unfortunate part of this, I think, is the coaches for Indianapolis, who went to the Colts with the understanding that McDaniels would be the head coach and they would be his assistants, and now he's not there. There have been some assistants who have not even been contacted by McDaniels since the news broke. So it's a messy situation. Is it classless or any of those other words that are being used? I don't know. Until we know, and we may never know the true circumstances as to why this happened. I don't think you can really paint that sort of a picture until the official reason is given, which it likely won't. There was a rumor that Robert Kraft swooped in at the last minute to offer a deal that McDaniels couldn't refuse because he wanted to try to get back at the Colts for Deflategate. That would not surprise me at all. I don't think that's likely, but it would not surprise me one bit if that's what ended up being the case and Kraft was just trying to get one last shot in at the Colts, who they did still have a press conference today even with no one to introduce. And Colts GM Chris Ballard saying that the rivalry with the Patriots is back on. Well, we'll see about that on the field. But this, I think, shows as well just how many problems the Colts have. We talked about Andrew Luck, not knowing if he will be healthy. The roster is in very urgent need of some help on defense, and the offense has some aging players and injury-prone players as well. So it's not going to be a job that'll be successful overnight. It's going to take some roster work and some a lot of ingenuity to try to build the Colts back up to where they were. So that could be another point as well for McDaniels. But one of the strangest situations that I think I've seen regarding a head coach turning down a job after basically agreeing to it in quite a while. This brings into question, too, how things went down in Denver. McDaniels was the head coach there and seemed to run out of favor very quickly in Denver. He did win one playoff game with Tim Tebow, but after that, things seemed to really fall apart. So there is a bit of an angle as to how this impacts the Vikings, as now a couple of the leading candidates for the Colts are Eagles offensive coordinator Frank Reich and Saints assistant head coach Dan Campbell. Vikings interviewed Campbell for the offensive coordinator spot that they have vacant. Campbell will interview with the Colts tomorrow. Frank Reich interviews with them on Friday. That Reich name is the one to keep an eye on, because if Reich were to end up getting the job, then as a departing Eagles offensive coordinator, what makes the most sense? Well, the most sense would be then for the Eagles to promote their quarterback's coach, who is John DeFilippo, who we are attempting to get as our offensive coordinator. So I think if you are a fan who follows closely enough and wants DeFilippo to come here to be our offensive coordinator, you want Dan Campbell to take the job. I think if Reich ends up taking the job, then I think we will see the Vikings go pretty hard after Daryl Bevel or Kevin Stefanski to be their offensive coordinator. I think it'll come down to one of those two names. Sean Ryan's still in the mix, as we talked about yesterday, but this entire situation with McDaniels has thrown a little bit of a wrinkle into the entire plan at coordinator for the Vikings. So a lot of moving parts with this, and there will be other candidates as well who will be interviewed. The Vikings, according to Adam Schefter, did officially request permission to interview DeFilippo about their offensive coordinator job, and we'll see when that can happen, because as mentioned yesterday, with it being a lateral move, we have to wait until he is his contract is up, which is the 14th. So if permission is granted, I think then in that case we can interview him, and we'll see. This is going to be something that that'll drag on probably into next week. But I would say after the 14th, we'll probably have a pretty good indication of what direction the Vikings are going. Then once that is done, once we have an idea of what's going to happen to DeFilippo, then we can start to figure out where this team goes for quarterback, and also where they go with the rest of their salary cap as well. So all of these pieces are kind of stacking up, and the dominoes will start to fall once that first hurdle is cleared that being getting the offensive coordinator in the building. Now, former Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia, I think, has accepted the Detroit Lions job. I guess I don't really have any 100% confirmation. And after what McDaniels did yesterday, I suppose anything's possible. But now it sounds like Greg Schiano, the current Ohio State defensive coordinator, is going to stay put. So a lot of coordinators who are rumored to be heading to various points, evidently changing their mind. So this will be something we have to keep an eye on for the next week or so. We will take our final break here today, but when we come back, lots to look at for what's on deck tonight. That's all coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Let's take a look at what's on deck for tonight. Starting off in the NBA, Brooklyn at Detroit at 6 o'clock, Houston at Miami at 6:30, Minnesota Timberwolves at Cleveland tonight at 7 o'clock, Utah at Memphis at 7 o'clock, Indiana at New Orleans at 7, and San Antonio at Phoenix, that's at 9:30 tonight. Big Ten men's basketball, Maryland at Penn State at 5:30. Number 14, Ohio State at number 3, Purdue. That's at 7:30 tonight. And NHL. The schedule for tonight includes Nashville at Toronto at 7:30 Eastern. Boston at the New York Rangers at 8 Eastern. And Edmonton at Los Angeles at 10:30 Eastern. That is a look at what's on deck here for tonight. It is time for us to once again wrap it up. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. A big thank you to Shabazz Khan for joining the show today. Coming up tomorrow, a double dose of football once again. We'll recap the Super Bowl with Cody Benjamin and see how he's feeling as an Eagles fan after the Super Bowl win. Also, we'll be joined by Jason B. Hirschhorn, who covers the Green Bay Packers, to take a look at what they need to do this offseason and some of the moves they've made from a coaching standpoint as well. So all of that coming up on tomorrow's show. Have a great rest of your afternoon. Back tomorrow at 3:05.